Fighting for America.
There's been 23 months since then when all you've been doing is flapping your mouth and not doing anything. So listen, you want to have the conversation later, I'm happy to have it, buddy. But until that time, sit down and shut up.
Fighting for Idaho.
You got to make sure Allison's got the ball at the end of the game by hitting every single solitary soul you know to go and vote and have a victory. Thank you and God bless you.
Fighting for you.
If you got it, Bowler, you thought you had it.
I would start playing that song by Queen. Goodbye, everybody.
Boise's Mr. Right.
I've got to go.
Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, Kevin Miller with you here at 580 KIDO, joined by editor-author Jonathan Last, The Seven Deadly Virtues, 18 conservative writers on why the virtuous life is funny as hell. Mr. Last, good morning.
Good morning.
So we're always trying to, I guess, get values and morals and make them mainstream in the moral relative world we live in today. How do we make that hip?
It's a hard sell, isn't it?
I was going to say.
You know, we were sitting, like, thinking about this book with all my co-confederates in this, we're like, so who's going to take chastity? You know, who's going to go and stand up for temperance?
Right.
And those, it is a hard sell. It's all a hard sell. The moral life and the virtuous life, it isn't a pile of puppies. But on the other hand, you know, it is sort of important. And, the book is, I think, a, you know, did you ever read Bill Bennett's great book, The Book of Virtues?
Yes.
In the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I mean, it left a deep mark on me when I read it as a kid. But on the other hand, like, it's really tough love. Like, if you go back and reread it now, it's, you know, like Father Bennett is standing there with, you know, the baseball bat saying, you're going to be virtuous or else.
Yes.
And we just felt like that doesn't really work anymore. You know, the culture's too far gone. If you're going to really engage people, you got to be a little bit funny. You got to meet them where they are. And so that's what we tried to do with this.
Well, how did you, let's start a little. You've got PJ O'Rourke, Christopher Buckley, Jonah Goldberg, and Andrew Ferguson, just a few on the cover here. I think they're great writers, and certainly their works speak for themselves, but I don't know if they would be doing the stand-up, if you will.
Yeah, well, they're really funny. I mean, that's the thing. With all these guys, I basically, you know, I went through and I picked what I... The guys whose work I think is the funniest and who I sort of go to first just in my own pleasure reading. And that's how I assembled the roster. So I thought, you know, if I were going to be like the reader of a book, who would I really want to read on this stuff? And so I went through and I got them and a lot of other really great people too. James Lilix, Christopher Caldwell, and Rob Long. I don't know if you know him. He was the executive producer of Cheers, a great Hollywood writer, great funny man. Larry Miller, stand-up comic. And anyway, they all said yes, and like I said, it turns out okay, because the idea is, you know, we want to poke fun at the virtues, sort of, you know, admit where it's a tough sell, and also the other point that almost everybody wound up getting to, sort of independently, we didn't talk about this before, and is that you got to be careful with virtues, because if you fixate on any one virtue to the exclusion of others, you know, the pursuit of extremism in virtue can easily become vice. You know, if all you're interested in is curiosity or justice, or even prudence, then you could take that far too far. You know, perseverance can become foolhardiness if you're not being a little bit prudent. And so I think everybody was really in tune with that. And one of the things that really comes through, one of the themes of the book is when you're going to think about virtue, you got to sort of cultivate all the virtues together as a group. You can't just, you know, go after one; otherwise, you can wind up in a bad place too.
Well, just going back to a chapter on faith here, chapter 8 with Larry Miller, I mean, he's known as a great comedian in movies and stand-up. I never thought that he would be talking about faith.
Yeah, you know, what's funny, so I met Larry years and years ago when he started writing for my magazine, The Weekly Standard, and it was the strangest thing. He just called the office one day, called the main number, and, you know, the kid who was our receptionist then said, hey, Chad, there's this guy, Larry Miller. He says he's an actor. He wants to talk to somebody about writing for the magazine. Are you kidding? I knew who he was. I'd seen Pretty Woman and 10 Things I Hate About You and the Seinfeld episode with the doorman. And anyway, so we talked, and he's a really smart guy. He went to Williams College as an undergrad. He's very, very bright, very interesting guy. And, you know, so we started talking, and he started writing for us. And I was surprised at what a great writer he was. And he said, we have to understand, stand-up is all writing. You know, like a great stand-up routine is a great piece of writing. You know, and people who do this for a living, they spend a lot of time writing and rewriting and honing this stuff till the material is really perfect and lean. And it's only a slightly different medium from doing long-form writing like what I do in a magazine. And so his skills were totally transferable, and he's a wonderful writer.
What's the message? Of inspiration or of humor or of both?
Both, I think. I mean, you know, on the one hand, it's a fun read. It's the type of read that you could give to anybody for Christmas. You know, I mean, I would say you can give it to your liberal Democratic uncle. You can give it to your, you know, very conservative daughter or friend. There's really very little politics about it. It's an entertaining book. It's fun to sit down with. But what it also does is it sort of, you know, the book sort of, the effect of it, I think, basically, is to have, you know, sitting with a buddy, you know, having a good time, but at the end of the conversation, you realize, like, you've actually gone to a somewhat serious place. There's some philosophical seriousness in it, but it's all in stealth mode. And so you finish the book and you realize, hey, wait a minute, I've just been catechized in a way, and, you know, I've talked a little bit about Aristotle along the way, a little bit about Plato, a little bit about, you know, Alistair MacIntyre and some of these, you know, big important things. And I didn't even realize that I was eating spinach along the way.
Is that lost here, though, in the, you know, world of witchcraft, world we live in today, sir?
You know, I think a lot of that has been lost. Yeah, I mean, in my introduction, I talk a little bit about, you know, Alistair MacIntyre and how, you know, I mean, the original ideas about virtue all come to us from Plato. I mean, this is long ago stuff. It actually is not religious at all. It's very philosophical. The original philosophical virtues were prudence, justice, courage, and temperance. And, you know, the whole idea was that, you know, you pursue these virtues that allow you to achieve eudaimonia in the pursuit of your telos. And, you know, all of a sudden you're like, you know, talking in classical Greek, and you feel like you're in like those little blue, you know, little green lobe classic library books that only like super serious PhDs have. And so I think a little bit of that has been lost. The book, I think, is a thin end of the wedge to get into some of that, though. But as I said, it does it in such a way that you never feel like you're eating your spinach.
Well, you know, Popeye's still around, though.
Yeah. The key is we want to take the spinach and then deep fry it and then coat it with cotton candy.
Now, it's got to be tough for you because these are all your boys and friends, and you got some ladies in here as well. But what's the one virtue that stands out for you, maybe personally, or one that's sold the best?
You know, my favorite, you're never supposed to say, gosh, it's only you and me, right? Nobody's listening.
Well, probably Michael Graham is, but, you know, he's always listening.
I would say the one essay that really hit me the hardest and in the best way is James Lilex. James is a columnist for National Review and a columnist for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and he writes about simplicity. And so, you know, in the course of editing this book, I've probably read his essay now 35 times, and I both laugh out loud during it, and I actually tear up a little bit at a certain point every single time. It's just the most lovely piece of essay writing I think I've read in the last 5 or 6 years. But one of the things I've been gratified by is that when, you know, I talk to people who've read the book, most people have different favorites. You know, some people really love Larry Miller's, some people really love PJ's, and so I think no matter what you're into, no matter where your tastes are in these things, you're going to find something that really hits you in that sweet spot, makes you fall in love.
The Seven Deadly Virtues, again, Jonathan Last with us. Can we ask you a little bit about your day job?
Sure.
How do you see this playing out, these big midterms coming down?
Boy, we're down the wire. I'm very bullish, actually, on Republican prospects here. I think, you know, so if you go to Las Vegas and you go to the sports book, they have what's called the over-under on a lot of games, right? And so that's the number of points that are going to be scored in a game. And the idea behind setting the over-under line is you want to get half the money betting the over, half the money betting the under. If I were setting the over-under for this election, I would say probably 54 seats for the Republicans when all is said and done is the line. And I might take the over on that. But I think 54 is probably the most probable outcome. You could see 53. 52 is possible, I guess, although I'd be a little bit surprised. I would say, put it this way. I would say that 52 seats for Republicans and 56 seats are probably about equally as likely. But with the caveat that we may not know all the answers by the end of the night on Tuesday, because we're going to have two races, I suspect, which are going to wind up in runoffs in Louisiana and Georgia. Yeah, but in both of those runoffs, I suspect the Republican will win handily.
You know, Jonathan, besides the Weekly Standard and talk radio in some places, it's kind of frustrating because You know, I'm watching TV last night, and they go, well, let's just say the Dems win New Hampshire, and Georgia's a toss-up, and let's just say this, and let's just say that. They've got to, and I'm going, oh, where's the other side here?
You know, I do sort of, I'm a little bit amazed myself looking at this. I am not a Pollyanna guy in all this. I was, all through the 2012 election, I sat there thinking, boy, Obama's going to win this by 4 points. You know, I did not fall for the Mitt Romney hype in that. I think the clear-eyed view of this election has always been, or should always have been, Republicans are poised to do very well. And, I mean, Obama is such an albatross around the neck of Democratic incumbents, and he hasn't made things easier for them, right? I mean, there's always something new happening. There's always another, I hate to say scandal, because scandal's not the right word, but there's always something else blowing up. You know, it's the badly handled Ebola stuff. It's him coming out and saying that, you know, well, all of my policies are on the ballot, and these are, you know, these red state Democrats may say that they don't support me, but they all vote with me anyway. So if you're Kay Hagan,
right,
you know, or Mary Landrieu, you have to say, what are you doing? and I really is just about a perfect storm, I think. And I would be very surprised if Republicans don't do extremely well.
One great thing about your publication, the Weekly Standard, is that you guys tell it like it is. You hold Republicans, conservatives, Tea Party folks, the liberals accountable. What about the growing, and we see this here in Idaho as well, the growing division between the grassroots, the conservatives, and the more establishment folks in the Republican Party?
You know what? This is actually a little bit of a hobby horse of mine. Where I think the real divide is actually between the money in the Republican Party and the actual voters. You know, we talk about the establishment. The establishment doesn't even really exist all that much anymore, so much as it is a function of where the money is. And I think the Republican money is in a very different place than the Republican actual voters are these days. And that's a problem, I think, actually. You saw that play out in the 2012 primary process. I think you could very easily see that happen again in 2016. I mean, we've long assumed that the 2016 primaries was going to be this, like, cavalcade of Republican stars with a very, very, you know, heavy, serious field. You know, people seem to think of 2012 as a clown show. And there was the idea that actually, you know, we'll have the 1927 Yankees all running for the Republican nomination in 2016. That may wind up happening still, but on the other hand, you can easily see a way to another clown show, where you wind up with like Rand Paul facing off with Jeb Bush as like the last two men standing, which I think would not make a lot of Republicans happy. A lot of Republicans would like to see a much more serious field of people like Scott Walker and Mitch Daniels and Marco Rubio, and Bobby Jindal, and I just don't know that we're going to get there.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. But then again, it's the money and it's how it's positioned. And the whole idea, and final question, Jonathan, the whole idea of electable, that's what happened with McCain. That's what happened with Governor Romney. But it never seems to work out. Wouldn't the Republican Party be better off to, you know, do a Goldwater? At least you have someone with the core beliefs as opposed to, hey, the lesser of evils, and find out if it resonates or if it is a disaster, because you're going to lose anyway.
I'd be interested in trying that myself. I mean, to defend the honor of the Republican Party in this, the Republican Party tried like heck to not nominate Mitt Romney last time around. You know, I mean, it was one of these things where the Republicans really, they tried very hard not to nominate him. It is amazing, in fact, that the race went as deep as it did. And if you really go back and look at the numbers, you know, so Romney wins the Michigan primary by 5 points. If he loses that primary, I actually think Santorum is the nominee. You know, I think the whole edifice was going to crumble out from underneath Romney. But this just highlights the importance of money. And the Republican money is just in a very different place than the Republican Party itself is. And that's going to be a source of continuing tension and a real source of problems for the Republican, just electoral prospects going forward, I think. At some point, they have to reconcile that split in the way that the Democrats have. I mean, the Democratic money is really where the Democratic base is, and that's very helpful to that party. And it's crippling for the Republicans to have that dissonance.
Well, you talk about a Goldwater moment. Santorum is the nominee. That would have been some good
stuff.
It would
have been interesting, right?
As I
said, look, you know, Santorum could wind up with 42% or he could wind up with 52%.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows. Mm. But everybody knew that Mitt Romney's ceiling is 48%. The reason you know that is because he's run for office a bunch of times, and everywhere he runs, no matter who he's running against, he gets 48%. So He has an electoral ceiling, no matter what the office is and who the opposition.
Jonathan, we appreciate it. We urge everybody to go get your book, The Seven Deadly Virtues, and thank you very much, sir.
Great being with you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day.
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I'm in KIDO, our great friend Simon Owen joining us from London. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, Kevin. Hiya.
So instead of talking ISIS or Ebola or NATO, or blah, 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 we're going to talk about statues that talk?
Yeah, it makes a nice change from all the death and destruction, doesn't it? From normally focusing on all those details. I was out the other day walking around London parks talking, or at least listening to a number of statues which have been given this sort of, not quite come to life, but have been given voices. Now, the way this works is a couple of dozen across the city have had new plaques put up next to them, and they feature a code that you can scan on your smartphone. And if you do that, your phone starts ringing with a message saying incoming call, and then the name is Queen Victoria or whoever you are looking at. So then they are on the phone and they tell you a bit about their story and maybe make some comments about where they're positioned. So there's Peter Pan, who talks about saying he doesn't think it's a very good likeness of him. Queen Victoria, notoriously hard to please monarch. She complains quite a lot, saying she's bored and uncomfortable in on the sort of throne she's sitting on. And then you've got Sherlock Holmes, the detective from the stories, who's outside Baker Street Underground Station, close to where he lived in the novels. And he just wishes, he says, that he didn't have his back to the road. He says it's frustrating that he can hear the traffic going by, but is unable to satisfy his curiosity to see what kind of vehicle the 21st century has devised.
What's your reaction getting a call from Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I mean, they're well done, and they're in many cases, they're fairly recognizable voices. Like one of them is Patrick Stewart. One of them is Hugh Bonneville, who, if you watch Downton Abbey, he is the Lord of the Manor or the main guy in Downton Abbey. So these are well-voiced pieces and monologues, really, that you listen to. And they do give him a bit of a new lease of life. And a lot of them are particularly soon. Peter Pan, for instance, is a message that's kind of aimed at children. When I was down there looking at these statues, actually, not many people seem to notice that you could do this. And also, particularly if you're a tourist, this is a data roaming issue, so it's going to cost a fortune on your cell phone. So I'm not quite sure how much of a take-up they're getting, but they're there for a while. I'm not sure if they've got any date to take them down. So if you are here in the next, I don't know, maybe 9 months or so, you should be able to catch some of them.
Well, I think the chance of me going there about the as much as you coming here.
Hey, you never know. Don't count your chickens.
I'm with you. Anything else going on? Anything other things going on, uplifting as opposed to, you know, again, the usual stuff?
No, I mean, we're looking at, I don't know if you saw, there was an NFL game here at the weekend, one of three going on this autumn. And now the talk here is of whether this is going to be possibly a permanent setup. They've been playing games here for quite a few years now at the National Soccer Stadium at Wembley. And actually this year I'm sensing that there is more of a sort of serious drive to get an NFL team in London. It may sound fairly crazy, the flying distance, the jet lag, the time difference to the US, but they tend to do pretty well at coming close to selling out this stadium. There's obviously money to be made there as well. And so now we've had in the build-up to this game at the weekend, the British finance minister came out and said, you know, nailed on, Britain wants one of these. The NFL has welcomed that. And today some accountants have come up with a report detailing whether it's feasible or not. So there is a sense that perhaps there could be a bit more NFL coming here. And again, hopefully that would count as uplifting, unless you're somewhere towards the West Coast, in which case you might have a very early start to watch your team 1 week.
I'm with you, but Simon, we're going to ask you to report. How is the NFL received over there compared to football?
Well, I mean, football clubs, there are 92 football clubs in England's main leagues, and then more in Scotland, more in Wales, and most of them get pretty sizable crowds, certainly in the sort of top league, you're looking at 70, 80,000 at some stadiums every week. Now, the NFL gets three times a year, perhaps gets sort of 65, 70,000 people through the doors. So at a limited level, I think it is possibly viable. That seems what the figures suggest, but I think they would do it gradually. My hunch would be that you would get one team would be committed to, say, doing four trips in a season, something like that, rather than getting a whole new franchise or a whole new team set up here from scratch. In the long term, they perhaps would like to see it. If it works, they will get a team based here permanently. But I think for the time being, it's going to be a gradual increasing. But they're up to three games a year this season. That is only becoming more and more common, more and more games going on over here. So I wouldn't be surprised if you find a little bit more commitment in the coming years.
Well, and nothing like the old World League of American Football, huh? The London Monarchs, I remember.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it doesn't have the same... hasn't got right through society in the way that soccer or cricket has over here. Most people do not know the rules of American football, and there are quite a lot of rules that need to be learned for it. So it's not quite sort of saturated society in any way like that in the way that other sports have here. But as I say, they go pretty close to selling the stadium out whenever they do these games. So clearly there is a reasonable appetite there.
Simon, we appreciate it. Say hello to Sherlock for us.
Will do, Kevin. Thanks.
Thank you. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Don Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men.
Men, 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 manly men.
Men, 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 manly men. Men, 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 manly men.
580 KIDO, welcome to All Hallows Eve or Ween or whatever you want to call it. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Kevin.
You know, I'm doing some hanging out lately in the Walmart.
Which one or do you want to say?
You know, the one on the way into work.
Oh, okay. I know which one that would be.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm off the ramen noodles. I'm off the nacho
Libres.
Slim Jims in the morning. And I didn't pick up the vegetables, so I went to pick up some vegetables. And I'm sitting there and... at the checkout line, and
you sit at the checkout line?
Well, yeah, okay. Make myself at home. You know, you ring the bell. Hello, hello,
hello. They like that.
Yes. Well, the sign always says ring the bell until you get service. Hey, 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 hey. So anyway, I'm hanging out at the Walmart.
That's because they're in the back going, no, you go, you go.
Not that guy.
You draw the straw.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there hanging out, and I notice a woman walking by, and she's in her pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
And her bathrobe.
That's a good thing. See, at Walmart, you can go in your pajamas. They're okay with that.
And then I'm sitting there going, what the blank?
You've never seen that before?
Well, yeah, but it's usually during the day. But this is, you know, 3, 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes up to me and she goes, I'm not feeling well. And she's dressed up as a zombie. I'm going, it's a little early, ma'am. It's a little early.
For zombies?
To be dressed up.
Oh, so it was a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
Nice. So maybe there's a big prize, a big corporate prize or something.
At 4 in the morning?
Sure. Are you at work right now?
If you call it that.
Well, see, you're at work. You're at work right now.
Yes.
So how can you blame her?
I'm not dressed up in a costume.
What are you wearing?
Me? I'm wearing my business casual.
Do you have Crocs on?
Yes.
Do you have shorts on?
You know, they're formal Crocs. They're formal Crocs.
Oh, you're in a costume.
No, I'm. If I were coaching sports, I'd be in a proper attire. If I were on the sidelines, running a practice.
So you came today dressed as a coach.
Sure.
You're in costume. I'm just saying.
Yep. You got me on that one.
Yeah, see, there we go. See, I'm sharp. I am sharp as a razor. I was not up late blogging about politics.
I want to say that I've done my civic duty, because if you had a choice, and you did,
mm-hmm.
did you watch the Florida State down 21-0 or the LeBron christening, or did you watch
New Orleans.
The last debate? Oh, New Orleans versus Carolina.
Yeah, that was a good game. Oh, guess I gave myself away.
Apparently.
I didn't watch a second of those debates last night.
Well, I did, and we'll get into that. But I think that one sports network is actually ruining sports collectively.
The evil four-letter one?
I would say yes, just because All day long, they were in one city about LeBron James, mm-hmm. a christening, and LeBron lost last night. But I'm thinking to myself, you don't have to be good. You don't have to be compelling. You just have to have big money, big resources. And here we are. We're in Cleveland, and you would think it was the NBA Finals because they had other people at the end of the game. Because not only did I watch the Idaho governor debate, then I watched the New Hampshire Senate debate. I just couldn't get enough politics last night.
Ugh.
And I was flipping around, and I'm looking at this going, wow, is it that big of a deal? Well, they've made it a big of a deal, and quite frankly, I think they've done a disservice to sports. And there's some article that you know, our colleague on 630 The Fan, Ben Maller, was talking about. I can't seem to find it, where it talks about how the four-letter network is ruining the college football playoff system because of its media manipulation.
Okay. Give me half a second to explain myself here again.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to turn off the mic.
And this could be my anti-SEC bias coming out. But again, the four-letter station has told us how great the SEC is, which, by the way, they have, you know, a handful of very good teams. No, there's no denying that. Very good teams. But the bottom half of it is as bad as anybody else. So what it comes down to is if you have enough power and enough money and enough influence to tell people what's important, to tell people what they like, they can make you accept anything. Done. You can turn your mic back on.
Well,
am I wrong or right?
Maybe the Pac-12 should have made the same deal with the devil.
They should have.
Yeah.
But their problem there is a clock.
I think ESPN would have done something similar.
I think the problem there is a clock, though. When you have the entire east of the Mississippi going to bed about the time you start one of your games, the clock is just going to be your enemy no matter what you do there.
Right.
And, you know, unless you start your games all at 10 in the morning. And you can't do that. So you know, but it is. And whether you're talking about the evil four-letter sports station, whether you're talking about telling us that The Voice is entertainment, or that, you know, and I look at the morning TV shows where, hey, look, here's a YouTube video of a rabbit eating carrots. And we watch that and go, oh, that's great, I got to share that. Somebody has told us that this stuff is important and they make us buy into it.
Well, sure, they make us buy into it. And if you don't have the critical thinking skills, which you and I have talked about before, are sadly missing these days. Sadly missing when it comes to politics. Sadly missing when it comes to just about everything else.
Mm-hmm. We have become a nation of people that we don't think things through.
Right.
We accept the first thing told to us, and somewhere, whether it's the four-letter sports network or NBC or CBS or ABC, I'll lump them all in there, or radio stations, you know, what is said on this station, think through it critically. Not everything is all correct. Think through it critically and really think it through. But most of us, we don't have time, or that's too much work.
Right.
And we don't. And so sometimes we're led right down a path, and, you know, that's where the magician gets you. I'm looking at his left hand, and the right hand, he's robbing me blind.
Right.
Think, people. Happy Halloween.
Indeed. So we've got that going on. We'll have Sheriff Joe on coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. The governor will join us. A very spirited debate. If you were like Dave and missed it last night, you can read my play-by-play of it at 580kido.com. And we also have at 580kido.com your chance to vote on who you think won the debate last night. And I'm sure, without even looking at it, that Mr. Bujak is ahead.
Yeah, somehow he's got his people wired in to all vote there. So, but good for, again, if you have enough power, you have enough influence, and that would be the influence part, to influence your people to vote there, you can make people think whatever you want.
Right.
So, you know, there you go. I know this, you know, the debates last night did not matter to, what, 34,000, 35,000 Ada County voters. Didn't matter.
Okay.
Did not matter a bit. Because they've already cast their ballot. It's done. No matter what was revealed, what was said, 35,000 residents of Ada County, doesn't matter. It's already done. Already voted on. They could come out last night. One of them could have come out and showed their horns and show that they were the devil, and it doesn't matter, the vote is cast.
Early voting.
Not that I'm saying that anyone last night was a devil. I'm just saying.
I'm sure they would have liked to have called each other the devil.
Well, from what your blog said online at 580kido.com, it was spirited.
I tried to make it entertaining, and our friend Two Fly Bry, it was funny, he goes, I'm not trying to kiss up to Kevin, but I'm getting more drawn to the blog than the actual debate. I mean, I'm sitting there going, okay, Butch smacks AJ, and I think the line of the night was when the governor called him...
Careful now.
Yeah,
it wasn't Belukov.
No, it was a mixture of Bujak and Belukov. And
yeah.
Actually, I was tweeting with our friend Phil Hardy last night. Not tweeting. I was texting. Let's see. Belukjak. Yes, Belukjak. That's what he called him.
He didn't call him Kojak, though.
No, and then at the end he started calling Mr. Belukov or AJ Belukov. And AJ, and it was one of those, AJ, you know better than that. And he was scolding the reporters, and he goes, Betsy, get your facts right. And he's pointing, and I thought, and again, it shows you how much the governor wants it at 580KIDO, that you forget that he's a 72-year-old man, number one.
Who could be retired doing anything else he wants to.
And number two, the governor was sitting there, he got in Bujak's face, and if I was Mr. Bujak, I'd say, Governor, you need to back up. And it wasn't like, it was just, he was just so on fire. And once again, look, now Dave Burnett, here's where you get to say, oh, Kevin, you're being too whatever. At 580KIDO. You know, we talk about the best and brightest, and I guess that's what it was last night. And, oh, I'm a hater for not being a part of it. But they couldn't control, the moderator couldn't control the governor. She really wasn't impressive. Of course, this was the same one that had the debacle with Harley Brown. And I'm sitting there going, when you give someone 10 seconds, you cut them off. You make your authority felt. Otherwise, they're going to run you. And shame on AJ and shame on John Bujak for not doing the same thing that the governor did, which is filibuster the entire night.
Well, I'll be honest with you, and this is my personal opinion, and so some people may say, well, it stinks. I don't watch this debate just because it's, number one, they are very, let's just say, more liberal-leaning in mindset than I am. The three panelists asking the questions, okay, a whole lot more liberal than I am. And I really don't care what questions they have to ask.
Right.
I don't. So I don't watch it. I would like to see somebody with a little more conservative bent asking questions that, as a conservative, I would ask.
Oh, it was Loony Leftville.
Yeah.
It really was. You had the spokesman paper, you had the Idaho Educational News, and then you had Rocky. And the first paragraph, I go, I miss Dan Popke. At least there was some gravitas with Mr. Popke. At least there was something there. And I'm sitting there going, there's no diversity. It's the same cronies.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about cronyism that are on that goofy show once a week. And it's like, you think to yourself, you know, this is Idaho Public Television. The state is predominantly Republican. The state is fiscally conservative, if nothing else. Where's the person to represent those people? And shame on public television. We pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
They should make a broader effort. They really should.
They should make an effort to represent the mindset of the people here, and they don't.
Right, and it is unfortunate. So we have that. We'll be talking about the debate here at 580KIDO, taking your thoughts. By the way, again, our instant poll there, who do you think won the debate? And over the weekend, I do want to remind everybody, I will, how should I put this? I will be breaking down the top three contenders, must-read blogs, and I think, you looked at it, and I think we're up to six people that read that live blog last night, so that's we've doubled our audience.
I read it before I went to bed. I use it as going to bed material.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, but I think the last time it was Jeff, the sales guy, and it was our political correspondent, and I think...
Justin,
I think we doubled it. By the way... How about, and speaking of politics here at 580KIDO, what about, I thought Mitt Romney was running, not running for anything. He's on with Simpson, he's on with Rich, and he's on with Governor Otter.
Using his influence.
What do you make of that?
Well, they're capitalizing on his visit and using his influence.
Hmm.
So, again, if you have enough persuasion, you have power, you have enough money, you can make people believe whatever you want.
Right.
And not saying it's right or wrong either way, but it just is. I miss the old days. Well, I guess I never was part of the old days. Back when you used to stump on a train and they go around and you get to meet them and talk to them personally.
Right.
And that really is a big, to me, that's a big part. And that is an advantage, I feel, here at the radio station, that we are blessed in that we have the ability to meet and talk with these people face to face. And you gain a lot from that. Over the TV, you can make people think whatever you want. When you meet somebody, look them in the eye and talk to them face to face, you come up with a different feeling.
And I got to tell you, there's a difference between being on TV for 3 minutes and doing radio.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's a poll forwarded us by the big boss that says all the Republicans are going to win.
The big boss? Our big boss?
Yes, sir.
Said that all the Republicans are
going to
win?
Somebody sent him a poll, and he forwarded it on to us, and I'm sitting there going, I'm not too sure about Ibarra. And I hear our friend Mr. Denny's in trouble, too.
Now there's news, though, coming out about Jana, about the custody case, and the Twin Falls paper has a big thing in it today.
Man.
So the dirt and the mud is slinging in the superintendent of education
now,
thing.
Now, that might be a personal thing, but you go back to plagiarism. I got a doctorate, but I didn't. I was the educator of the year, but I wasn't. Man. I don't know. I do know. I think Ibarra's got issues.
Well, now they're trying to bring up the other candidates' issues. So,
what about your issues? When are you running for office?
I am running for traffic.
Oh, boy.
There we go. Traffic knowledge coming out of Cannon County, Kevin, and to...
And back, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And 47 right now in Meridian. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to work safely and on time at 580KIDO. 59 coming up next, our exclusive interview with Sheriff Joe Arpaia of Maricopa County in Arizona. We'll get his thoughts on Idaho and, of course, just what is the big danger when we're talking about the southern border and whether or not that will impact us here in the Gem State. We'll also hear from Governor Otter coming up today. We'll be taking your calls on the big debate last night if you saw it. If not, check out our blog, the live blog there. I blogged about it real time during the debate. And we are asking you the question, who do you think won? That's at 580kido.com. We'll share those results coming up. Stay tuned. Stay informed. Kevin Miller.